And he said, I've seen you help other guys that have come on. And he said, your advice, your expertise. And he said, you're the shave doctor. And that's where it came from.
Right. I mean, I get stopped in the street by guys that have been through this and go, oh, thanks to Pam. She's done a great job. My
so
skin.
So rewarding, isn't it?
I've had wives come up and go, oh my God, my husband's finally shaving himself. It's lovely. His confidence improved. And this was skin that, you know, ordinarily people would shy back from shaving because of the carnage that can ensue.
Absolutely. And the lack of education.
Ooh,
that's the thing, the lack of education. If you shave your underarm and you sweat, guarantee all your smell, that's literally your deodorant or your perspirant, antiperspirant, got your BO.
Jeez.
And even guys are going down there as well now.
I was expecting you to kind of go, well, we brought in different techniques for shaving. I didn't expect you to bring in different body parts. But hey, yeah, hey, situations bring us
to
different...
I'm not using the cutlet down there either.
I was going to say. Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better. Welcome back to The Noble Barber. Today we're talking to Mark Sproston about, well, the shave doctor. We're really talking about shaving and Mark's journey through the last few years. Welcome, Mark. Nice to see you, mate.
And yourself, Anthony.
Thank you. So, I mean, shaving is a part of our business. Not a huge bit. I mean, obviously, you know, haircuts is the predominant, but it's enough that makes us a bit more interesting, a bit more special, and we certainly have the guy shaving someone somewhere throughout the week. But a lot of barbers don't. A lot of barbers we meet are nervous of the blade and haven't used it. And most of our guys come through your academy, and you've taught all of them, including myself. Refresh my shaving skills.
Remember it well.
And so let's talk about, you know, your shave career and your journey.
Well, I mean, I started back in the mid-80s. In them days, it's very much what we call the East End barber shave. So it was literally a flash around the face. And normally, it was a case of if there was no one waiting, you'd say, fancy a shave, sir? So, of course, then you'd slap the cream on, shaving off. In them days, it was classed a 13-stroke shave. And out the door they went.
And were you working as a barber at this stage?
Apprentice barber, yes. Yep. So I was doing all the learning and watching as you did. It was, I think in them days, there was a lot of power with the barbers. So everything was authoritative, and it was almost a case of you wait until we think you're ready. Even though you were ready, you thought you were ready, but I think they want to do everything. I think the white coat, which is missing these days, almost gave that authority as well. So, it took me a while. And I loved it. But the fact that people were coming in that I saw had problematic skin, ingrown hairs, shaving, rash, razor burn. You could see it. And the barbers kept saying, nope, time's money. Out the door they go. So I thought the grass is greener, went somewhere else. Same thing. So... It's taken a while for the industry to catch up in terms of the science. I'm hoping, and I've heard from my peers along the way, that I've been one of those catalysts in terms of bringing science to shaving. And it's not just about grabbing somebody in the chair. Excuse me. It's about looking at their skin type, their hair type, how they shave, which then determines how you shave them in the chair.
I mean, we have probably ongoing always one or two guys who have exactly that, really bad ingrowing hairs, very kind of bobbly skin.
Yeah.
Who terrify of shaving themselves or use an electric shaver, and the situation doesn't get better. We've got a group that comes through who do that. They come in for 5, 6, 7 weeks weekly for a shave. They've never done. These are quite young guys that are just coming to get their skin fixed. And I mean, I get stopped in the street by guys that have been through this and go, oh, thanks to Pam. She's done a great job. My
so
skin.
So rewarding, isn't it?
I've had wives come up and go, oh my God, my husband's finally shaving himself. It's lovely. His confidence improved. And this was skin that, you know, ordinarily people would shy back from shaving because of the carnage that can ensue.
Absolutely. And the lack of education.
Ooh.
That's the thing, the lack of education. So it's not taught that way in the colleges. It's not taught in the barbershops, really. It's literally a case if you can shave as quickly as possible.
I'll take the air off. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I took the time to study the science of it all and how it actually affects, you know, every man when they do shave, not just at home, but how we then shave in the barbershop. So that's the difference that I brought to what we've done over the last, 2007, shaving school up. So you're talking, 17 years?
Yeah, man.
And I've travelled the world with it. So not just, you know, remain locally or stayed in the UK. I've travelled the whole world, done lots of talks, lots of presentations.
Yeah.
So I've earned the right to be there.
So we've done that 17 years and you end up with the... At which point, presume you had a product range in your head because, you know, you've gone from apprentice barber. Did you finish? Did you qualify?
Yeah, I did seven years.
Right.
And then because I didn't like the cutting. So, and it's bizarre for some barbers, didn't like cutting, but my passion was the shaving.
And in store, did you find that there presumably wasn't enough work for you to be in the store shaving day in, day out?
Could have been if they advertised it.
Right, yeah.
But it was never advertised. Mm. So it was advertised. And of course, in them days, you were talking, £3, £4, £5 a shave? You know, so it was cheap. But yeah, if it's advertised, we could have done it all day long. But it wasn't.
No.
And the haircuts, as it is today, is still very much the predominant service in a barbershop. And then working with the likes of King of Shaves, with Elemis, Dermalogica, some of the professional brands. So I've worked on some of their services, some of the R&D. And then somebody said to me a couple of years after I set the training school up, hang on a minute, you're now, you know, taking so much into everyone else's brands. Why don't you start your own brand? And of course, at the time we were Shave School, I just started to do some work with King of Shaves.
Yeah.
And this guy called Dave Green, bless his soul, is no longer with us, marketing director for King of Shaves. Back in 2009, we did the King of Shays.
This is when you were popping. This was when you were TV darling, wasn't it?
This
you were popping up on shaving daytime TV presenters.
Right, and radio and all sorts of things, because we were just obviously getting the male grooming
side
to another level.
Definite birth of that.
So, and he was upstairs and we got this tour bus. I'm sure it was the Rolling Stones X tour bus. So upstairs, there's all these beds and shower rooms, and downstairs, they converted it to a barber shop. And in the summer, you'd actually have this revolving stage, so you could actually get more barbers and you can get more people on the stage in the barber's chair. It was amazing. So, of course, it was a great way of getting people on, and we'd shave them, and then they'd experience the shave with the new razor, and then 9 times out of 10, they'd go to Boots and go and buy it.
Yep.
I took a break, went upstairs, saw Dave on his laptop, and I could just see he was writing a live blog, as King of Shaves did in them days. And I just looked over and I had a cup of coffee with Dave and he went, Mark Sproston, a.k.a. The Shave Doctor. I went, Dave, what a brilliant name that is. And he went, well, listen.
Oh, that's where it came from, was it?
Yes.
Oh,
and he said, nice one. I've seen you on our tour. And he said, I've seen you help all the guys that have come on. And even our barbers, they're barbers from America as well as the UK. And he said, your advice, your expertise. And he said, you're The Shave Doctor. And that's where it came from.
Right.
And we rebranded from Shave School to Shave Doctor.
Cool.
And I thank Dave Green, bless him, because not long after that, then we used the brand name to then bring out our own range of shaving products back in 2011.
See, I've spoken to a variety of people over the years who've done a product range. And we all get that kind of moment where, I quite fancy that. It's a quagmire, a minefield, a nightmare. I mean, you've got a great range, but you've had a journey. I mean, would you recommend doing it? Would you talk yourself out of it now?
Yeah, if I was another 15 years younger and somebody said to me, would you have your own range again? Probably. I don't know. But
I mean, it's a great thing to have. It's a great product and we use it a lot have done over the years.
But I think the challenges that we've had, one is always the MOQs. So I would say an ambitious barber or barbershop owner, sometimes you want your own range.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the, what I call the white label private label.
Brand your own.
And it's normally silver and black and you shove your name on it. And I had one or two say to me, look, Mark, you've got your own range. Can you put me in contact with your factory? And I say, I can. However, do you realise what it takes to set up, you know, a product range in the first place? So you're talking, first of all, you've got to get samples in. Then you've got to actually protect your range. So that costs a lot of money. And then you've then got to get to the MOQ. So the MOQs, or anything from, it depends where.
What's an MOQ?
So your minimum order quantities.
Oh, right, okay.
So you're either talking 2,000, 5,000, 10,000. So back in the day, for us, it was 10,000 units per product.
Wow.
And we got five in the range. So you're talking 50,000. So you've got that investment even before you've sold anything to go into the marketplace. So it's not cheap. It comes with a lot of headaches. You can't get it right first time. If you've got a particular idea in your head in terms of the viscosity, how it performs,
that sort
of thing. So there's a lot of time, also a lot of financial investment involved. So it's not easy. It's not easy.
But a good learning, interesting. And then, I mean, you know, you've spent your career, as much as I've ever spoken to you, you spent your career getting into awkward places and kind of inhabiting them really well.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I don't think there were many people who went into barbering halfway through their career would kind of go, yeah, I'm more interested in the chin than the head. Yeah, that's a minority area you've done into. Then to go into men's grooming when you did. Yeah, these are real niches that you've clambered into and made your home.
Yeah, and it was the early days then.
Absolutely.
You know, so men weren't looking at getting to male grooming. In fact, it was almost sniggered at.
No, moisturising wasn't even part of anyone's regime.
No. And it's getting better, and it's still getting better. I think skincare now is actually outperforming shave care, which is brilliant. Wow. So us guys are now, even if you've got beards, you know, you're worried about what's underneath the beard. Mm. So you've got to, you know, protect it. Then also you've got to, you know, at least moisturise it because we don't know what's under the beard. So it is getting far better than what used to be 10, 15 years ago.
But, you know, I'm intrigued that what did that journey for you? What, I mean, it must change. It must be part of your personality or become something that you're put yourself under that stress level.
Yeah.
And or did you go into it blind that you're like, it's going to be fantastic?
No, because I think I come from on my father's side, you know, a line of farmers. So, you know, you see them struggle from one year to the next. Not always struggle, but you see the struggles. And then, in fact, funny enough, in the presentation I did last week and a talk at a conference, I actually started out before I went into barbering as a sore doctor. So I've always had a fascination with sharp tools and teeth.
Right.
Funny enough. So that was my uncle's business. And the reason I left that was because of the recession.
Right.
And in 89 and then went into barbering. Because of the passion for male grooming. And of course, in them days, there was sort of no male grooming courses or, you know, you couldn't join a company and go, can I become an apprentice and learn about male grooming or aftershaves? Ooh. It just wasn't heard of then. So I wasn't going into it blind. I knew the challenges that I'd be facing on a daily basis coming from a business point of view. But when it's your own, it is a big challenge and it can become a headache at times and it can become frustrating. We've seen a lot of highs, seen a lot of lows. I say the presentation.
And you've moved yours now and then you've had to go through the kind of online shopping, which was a new revelation. Have you embraced that? Is that a sales force for you now?
Yes and no, really. I mean, it's tough, is it? Because in the industry, you're trying to protect the industry. So your barbers and your hairdressers and your beauty therapists. And I've only seen a Facebook group chat 2 or 3 days ago where they were talking about products now going into a big retailer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, L'Oreal and Boots are using their professional logos to go into Boots.
But
and
it's
Superdrugs.
Been going on for years and years and years. There's nothing unique, nothing new. Whether they're doing it in a very clever way and using another brand. But I just talked about the minimum order quantities. And if you think about a barbershop, whether it's a one-man barbershop, you've got three barbershops, But your order quantities are never going to be the same as the retailers.
No.
I can hear a barber going now, yeah, but that's, we're a barber and you should protect our barbers. But when your MOQs, your minimum order quantities are 50,000 units, and the barber rings up and says, can I have two of them and three of them and four of them, please? Your return on your investment, if you were just concentrating on barber shops and hairdressers alone, would be humongous. And it would take you a long time to repay it before you put in another order in then for your next lot. I mean, that could last you for another year, 18 months. By then, your shelf life is obviously then being squeezed down. So you might have to chuck some product away. So that's why a lot of the big brands, I wouldn't say they've used the industry, but they have to have this dilution between retail and the trade.
Just get the numbers.
Yeah, and that's been a challenge as well, because in the early days, we concentrated only on the trade, and then they saw us go into retail in Europe, and all of a sudden I got people calling me going, Mark, what's going on? You know, so you can't please everybody.
No. But, as, you know, you, the big thing that we've learned, or, you know, I've certainly seen, and you've definitely learned, because I've you know, followed what you're up to, is kind of men's grooming coupled with men's mental health. Yeah, I saw you had an involvement with guys that are undergoing chemo, is that right?
Yeah, who were going through cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they look good, feel better. I was an ambassador for
which was
for
a great,
three
I was quite impressed with that. I thought that was an interesting, and how and why did you get involved in that, and what did you feel it was giving?
Do you know what? I think I got a call in 2020, at the beginning of 2020, just before the pandemic, and I met with the lovely Lisa, who was head of services for Look Good, Feel Better. And I met with her, and we had a great chat. And they were looking at introducing the men's services, because predominantly it's female. So it's about, until then, a lot of the females going through their cancer journey, but also support them along the way. So it's the things about how to fit their wigs. Makeup, things like that, but nothing for the guys. So we had a chat and they said, look, we've seen what you do. And it'd be good for, you know, for our men's service that we want to grow. They've already started it, but to bring my expertise in. So we did the first one at Derby County Football Club, believe it or not, which is great. And we all sat around this table. And I don't like to be like the stage shows. I like to be actually on the level. And for the first time, I actually said, I want to sit amongst all the guys. I want to experience what they're going through and how they're feeling. Because that was the most important part, how they're feeling. And you get to chat with them like you would, you and I are chatting now. But you couldn't do if you were stood up. Almost like that, again, that authoritative figure. And people are a bit frightened to ask a question. So I sat amongst them. I got chatting before and after. And some of the stories were so inspiring. But we take them through. And then the pandemic came. And we did the first one in Derby County. And then it went on online. And we went on Zooms, I think once a month. And of course, it was a bit like Celebrity. Remember Celebrity Squares all those years ago? So you got all these people popping up in the screen. And there was guys from all over the country suffering all kinds of different variants of cancer, but wanted to be on there to learn about, one, safe shaving, because they're told normally by the consultants they shouldn't wet shave because they cut themselves or nick themselves as risk of infection. So we take them through how to shave safely if they want to still use the wet razor. Skincare, because obviously that's important because it's been ravaged by cancer if it's skin cancer. And then sun care. So it was literally 2 hours.
Amazing.
Once a month on the Zoom. And what I got from it was so inspiring. But these guys obviously got my expertise from it.
And really unusual to have a group of guys that interested and actually that open
of all ages,
to it.
Of all ages.
No, I saw bits and they were generally kind of guys who probably never used a moisturiser or much more than a
bar
of
soap.
Some
of the early 70s. You get one or two that were still a little bit, I'm not going to be using that, or, I like the advice, but I'm going to stick to doing what I'm doing. But the majority were absolutely brilliant,
And I think we see our industry, we're much more aware of men's mental health now. and certainly the guys that are having shaves, it's that step more intimate than a haircut.
It's amazing.
And their journey of just improving their skin, and you know, obviously, you know, with a 5-blade Gillette, you can give yourself a damn good shave quite quickly at home. It's more than just a shave when you're going into having one at the barber's.
It is. And you know what? From that, going back to the look good, feel better, the Zoom workshops, we get guys on there who are suffering with cancer on their own. They've got no wife. They've got no family. Yeah. So they jump on these Zooms, and at the end they go, oh, Mark, 2 hours, this has also been good for my mental health. Yeah. Because they're chatting with everyone else that's suffering and experiencing exactly the same as them, but it's an outlet for them. They don't go out. They can't go out sometimes because they're on certain treatment. Yeah, doesn't allow them to go out because they get infection. But the mental health, and of course, when we had the pandemic, and they couldn't do any of the courses,
yeah,
I've got a model bank around 50 guys. So when they come to us in Rugeley, these guys were finally up and going, when can we get back in? When's the next course? When's the next course? Because for them, an hour or an hour and a half with my students was also therapy for them as well, because they were lonely. We're all lonely during the pandemic. We just reopened the country again, so they couldn't wait for us to start the training courses. So when you're lying back, you know, for an hour in the chair and just having a pamper and this luxurious shave, I mean, it's like being in another world, and you forget all your problems for an hour.
Yeah.
Or you can actually talk to your barber. And what we'll do as well, halfway through the practical, is we'll start talking, because what we try and do is mimic a busy barber shop or busy environment, so that the student is doing it.
Feels like they're in situ.
Yes. Yeah. And then also sometimes the model might be talking back, even though it's a cutthroat just starting to go around their mouth or their jawline. But it's good practice for them.
I mean, certainly I have my manager in here chatting about that, and going into one of the stores when you've got two or three guys lined up with hot towels over their face, it is it's the kind of manliest of all facials,
isn't it?
I mean, obviously I'm bearded up at the moment, but I love having a wet shave and will always doze off.
Well, you know what, you say you got your beard, it's not all about the beard. So when people hear about the wet shave, barber shave, they think, oh, it's all going to come off. There's no need.
No.
The majority of the students I'm now training want to come with me because, one, obviously what I've been doing for the last 15, 16, 17 years, but also it's how to get that clean look.
Good beard.
The neckline without causing any irritation, and how to deal with the ingrown hairs and the raised burn, the shaving rash, or problematic skin. So we may have what we've got up here, but it's
still the
edge clean shade underneath.
Very true. No, absolutely. But it is that relaxing. I think as guys, I think that's why the barber industry has become such a big link for men's mental health, is that it is a really kind of safe place to chat. You know, I mean, one of our stores is only 2 barber's chairs facing away from each other. And every time you go in, there's always the 4 people chatting as a little group, the 2 guys getting the haircut and the 2 barbers. It becomes this real chat.
You remember Desmond's on Channel 4?
Yeah.
And it's just
isn't it?
It's just like that.
You know, this whole kind of attitude that people feel that they can, and you have, you know, we all know we have much more deep, honest conversations with these guys than probably half the time with our mates standing at a bar.
Yeah.
And that shave part of it, I think, really highlights it in our stores.
It makes you wonder why as well, doesn't it? I mean, I've tried to think back why. You always talk about the barber, the hairdresser being the next, you know, somebody, the Samaritans.
Yeah, yeah, almost a therapist. Yeah, yeah.
Why? Because we sit in a barber chair, which sometimes could be really busy. Mm. And if you've got 3 or 4 chairs and how close they can be, but you're now talking to your barber about things that you would never talk to anybody else about.
Absolutely.
But with all the strangers surrounding you, it's quite bizarre, isn't it? So it must have that kind of relaxed.
It does have that safe
feel.
That safe
when you walk
feel.
In.
And yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think that's exactly it. It does feel very safe and warm.
And probably more so when you've got a cutthroat razor at someone's neck.
But that's nice. So like I say, for us, we often see guys fall asleep while they're having a, which, you know, I'm only ever going to say is testament to my team. But your academy is, you know, still going strong.
It is.
And people are still wanting to learn to shave. What's your, how are you finding students come to you? Are they coming for you for different reasons? Is it much the same? Are you seeing a difference in 2007? What's that, 20, nearly 18, 15, 16 years of doing?
17 years ago, yeah. I mean, obviously we've moved the science on, which is great because science moves all the time. Ooh. So I'm still learning. I've always said that if I think I know everything about shaving and skincare and the science of shaving, then I'll give up.
Right.
Because my philosophy in life is every day is a school day.
Mm.
So I want to think that what can I do differently next year? And it's funny because I've had some students that have been training with me on and off for the last 10 to 17 years. They might have a refresher. And all of a sudden I come back and I've had a few this year and they go, we didn't do that last time around. We didn't do that last time around. Because I'm always introducing new techniques.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm always looking at new things. Also trying to introduce new ways of getting guys in engaged, but to go out without any of the irritations that I would say a good majority of barbers around the world will get that we don't get because we do client consultation.
Yeah,
a lot don't do that. And if they do, they say they do, it's literally two or three questions. But you know, when you've been on my courses, it's literally, it's a comprehensive one. And that really works.
It gives the customer a bit of confidence, but it also gives the barber that's just about to do the shave. You know, before you start, you feel like you're already into that relationship with them. It already feels okay.
But I tell you what's also now popular is body shaving.
Oh, right.
So it's taken a while for us to, you know, even on a retail basis, you know, buy our shaving products, skincare products. But now I've had, and I started it back, I can't remember how long ago it was now, but I got invited to Body Power Expo show at the NEC. So when you think Body Power, you just think bodybuilders.
Ooh.
But it's actually for fitness fanatics as well. So where you're a cyclist, where you're a runner, swimmer. And we got the pop-up barbers. And on the first day, obviously you're expecting guys to come in the chair and go, right, yeah, I can just do with a shave. And then we'd sell products after. And the first day, we've got guys come and they're lifting a shirt. I'm going, what can you do for that?
Oh, my word.
Literally. What they've been doing, either shave themselves.
Yes.
Or they've been having it waxed.
Mm.
Now, for some, waxing's great. Of course, for others, you can have an adverse reaction to waxing. So what happens is you end up getting all these bumps when it starts to grow back. So, of course, we saw lots of guys with all these shave bumps on the chest, and we were shaving their chests in the chair, which obviously then created even more interest for guys coming.
Yeah.
And then we've got cyclists coming going, oh, can you shave legs and inner thighs? Because obviously we don't want the chaffing on our saddles when we're cycling. And can you teach us how to do that properly? So I've taught many athletes over the years how to body shave. On the retail, that's now becoming extremely popular. And when they do a lot of work in Europe, Spanish boys, lifeguards, always shave their legs and their arms. And swimmers do. It's all about
aerodynamics.
Oh,
my word.
So body shaming is now becoming quite popular. I've had three or four recently emails come through to say, look, can you teach us how to do the body shaving? So it's obviously on our list. Wow. And I've actually gone out to our bank of models with a few sniggers. We've had a lot of them say, yeah, we're up for it. When it's underarms, because underarms, I've got two teenage boys now and they hate hair. Not because of what I do, but because they hate hair. And if you think about what hair does, it harbours bacteria. And if you sweat, it's not so much the body odor that it's come through your glands, it's what's lying on your underarm hair that gives off that smell. So if you shave your underarm and you sweat, I guarantee all your smell actually is your deodorant or your antiperspirant, not your BO.
Jeez.
And even guys are going down there as well now.
I was expecting you to kind of go, well, we brought in different techniques for shaving. I didn't expect you to bring in different body parts. But hey, yeah, hey, situations bring us to different...
I'm not using the cutthroat down there either.
I was going to say, there's a clip from a Carry On film floating around my head somewhere that I really need to not bring back.
Carry On Barber.
Oh, my word. Oh, mate, yes. Bringing it back just to our barbershops. So we've got a lot of barbers out there now that are qualified and trained to shave.
Yeah.
How do we bring it back in as a strong, and how would we be marking it now as a service?
This is the frustration, isn't it? Because over the years we've lost the history of what a barber used to be. And people say, well, yeah, I know that, but times move on. But if you brought back the history of it in the colleges, to the apprentices, to some of the owners who realised what a barber... In fact, I did this talk, say, 2 weeks ago, and not one person in the room, 250 delegates, knew what a barber actually did up until 150 years ago. So they were a barber surgeon, as we know. So they did all the things that the surgeons didn't want to do in terms of minor surgery. They used to pull teeth. They were called a teeth drawer.
Yep.
Not a dentist, but they were part of the dentistry. So they performed all the minor surgery. And then the barbers decided to come a bit snobby about it and thought, hang on a minute, we want that work back. And then they almost snatched everything the barber was doing, other than the fact cutting hair or shaving before performing surgery. And that's what a barber now does. Ooh. And I joked 2 weeks ago that, you know, from that point of view, now you've got a barber who's on 20 grand a year, for example, and now a barber and a surgeon now is on 200 grand a year.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. But go about 150 years ago, almost doing exactly the same thing. So I think the history needs to be taught, at least, of what the barber used to be.
Well, you see every single barbershop's got his red and white pole, which were...
The blood and bandages.
Which were bloody bandages. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And of course, they were hung to dry, weren't they? But they were stained, and they were red and white. And of course, in the wind, they'd flatten. Yeah. Of course, that's where the idea came from.
The barber's pole.
But if you go to Europe, a lot of places in Europe, and even the Middle East, you'll see a lot more shaves going on than here. And some people might say, well, it's cheaper over there. It's not always cheaper. But they concentrate on bringing the whole aspect of barbering in.
Yeah.
And sometimes, even if you're not big on shaving, but to do a couple of shaves a week, even though they're not paying clients, by the way, so you can get your husband in, your dad in, your brother or somebody else you know in there, just to create that theatre.
Yeah.
And then somebody comes in and goes, I didn't know you do wet shaves in here. That's the one thing that barbershops don't do and barbershop owners don't do very well. It's advertise their services well, do they?
Yeah.
And they expect someone to come in through their door and go, oh, what service you got in this week? What's new? If you go into a hairdresser's that's got beauty as well, normally on the table there's a menu. And the women are good at it. We're not good at it because the women go in, they go, look around, look at the shelves. And they pick up the menu and they go, oh my God, they do this.
Yeah.
A guy doesn't like the barbershop anyway. I think from our research we did about 10 years ago, 60% don't like the barbershop environment, but they have to go in to have the haircut. They feel a bit uncomfortable.
Right.
Which is why I still find it bizarre that men open up in a barbershop. And what they do, they get on the phone and like this, aren't they? And they get to the door and they see your door and they go, and you look up and you go, all right, man, you're all right. Take a seat. On the phone, aren't they?
Mm.
And of course, years ago, you'd have all the screens upon the...
You'd
be watching the sports, Sky Sports, football, and everything else that's going on, the news.
Guys, yeah.
Everyone's now in their phones.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, you'll go, next. And then, of course, they put the phone down over to you. But they don't look around, see what's new.
No.
And then you don't go, oh, by the way, we've just introduced shaving. All my staff are now trained. Do you fancy a shave? So I think there's a lot of that missing.
Yeah.
And I think if barbershop owners were a little bit more proactive and actually put things around the shop in front of the client, you know, even on the mirror, you know, with a picture of somebody being shaved, we now offer shaves in here. And I think sometimes the industry wonder why there isn't enough shaving going on.
Yeah. Because I mean, we have a shave going on in the store and we'll have people, you know, taking pictures from the outside of it going on. It definitely has that kind of theatre and that drama.
And that's what you want to create. That. And that's why all the shaves were done in the shop window all those years ago, wasn't it? Because somebody walked past and go, oh my God. And they wanted to go and have a shave. Yeah. I remember doing one in Soho. And it was quite a narrow, tight, oh, I forgot what Roots something it was called now. If they're watching, they'll kill me for not knowing the name. It went into this narrow space, but the widest space was at the front. And it was about this time of year, 4:30, dark, and I've just finished doing a demo. And also, all these flashing lights were going mental within the within the shop. And outside, there was about 25 Japanese tourists. And they were just snapping away.
No, but it does. It's exactly, it's totally theatre. It really is. Really is. Yeah. So your academy's still going? Still teaching?
Yes.
Still demand?
There is still demand. We had a little lull, but because obviously the pandemic. And I think what it did is put a lot of people off from doing it because we were the last, as you know, to open within the industry. I think for some of the clients, it sort of, am I safe?
Yeah.
But now I think we've got over that. And I think there's a little bit more cash coming back into barbershops, businesses. Some of the new ones coming through are thinking, I just don't want to be cutting hair, which is brilliant. And what can I do to introduce more clients in my shop and get more people? How can I be different? That's the thing. I don't want to just open a barbershop and cut hair and undercut somebody or charge the same thing. How can I be different to the guy down the road? So they're now looking at, and this is the new generation again coming through, which is great for us, new ways to bring them in. And shaving is one of them.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, like I say, all our guys shave, and it's definitely something that, not the hugest bit of our business, but a really important bit of our kind of barbershop life. Mark, thank you so much for your time,
You're
mate.
You're welcome, really enjoyed
really
it.
Really enjoyed that, thank you very much, and I'm sure we could carry on chatting forever and ever, but I'm sure we'll think of an excuse to get you back at some point going forward.
Love to.
Thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.